Today, has the inflation hurricane abated? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news, and this is our weekly market update. In another volatile week, the market's latest winning streak closed to a mixed finish on Friday, following stronger profit reports than expected from several big US companies and more benign inflation news from the US this week. Hopes for an easier Fed also helped stocks worldwide to strengthen, although markets abroad were also mixed on Friday. For example, the MSCI World Equity Index was little changed, staying close to its peak for the year and its highest levels since the early 2022 period. For the week, the Dow was up nearly 2.3%, the S&P 500 rose 2.4%, and the Nasdaq advanced 3.3%. The S&P 500 remains up 17% for the year to date. Data showed on Wednesday US consumer prices growing at their slowest pace in more than 2 years, and on Thursday the smallest increase in US producer inflation in nearly 3 years, and on Friday the government reported that US import prices dropped 0.2% last month, and US consumer sentiment jumped to the highest level in nearly 2 years. The US earnings reporting season is just about getting underway, and Wall Street's expectations are pretty low. Analysts are forecasting the worst drop in earnings per share for S&P 500 companies since the spring of 2020. If they're right, that would also mark a third straight quarter where profits sank. Such expectations are, of course, a key for financial markets, because one of the biggest factors that sets a stock price is how much profit a company produces ahead. And a preliminary reading on the University of Michigan survey showed that consumer sentiment was at its highest level since September 2021, although lower income consumers weren't feeling so positive. Solid spending by US consumers have been one of the main pillars keeping the economy out of a recession. And they've kept spending despite high interest rates as employers have continued to hire more workers. And the survey also suggested consumers aren't raising their expectations for upcoming inflation that much. The Federal Reserve has been adamant about wanting to avoid a vicious cycle where expectations for high inflation drive behavior that only makes it worse. That bolstered investors' hopes. The Federal Reserve is close to feeling comfortable enough to halt its blistering campaign to raise interest rates. Of course, the Fed has already hiked its federal funds rate to a range of 5 to 5.25%. That's up virtually from zero earlier last year. High rates undercut inflation by slowing the economy and putting downward pressure on prices for stocks and other kinds of investments. But of course, it's not equally spread across the economy. The expectation is still for the Fed to increase rates at least one more time at its next meeting in 2 weeks, but traders are largely betting on that being the final hike for the cycle. But of course, that doesn't mean rates will come down anytime soon. Norman Villerman, chief group strategist at UBP, said he expected another Fed hike in July, but that the September meeting was more uncertain. We're probably closer to the end of the cycle, he said, although he added that above target inflation was still expected to persist into the longer term. Getting the 3% inflation reading is one thing. Getting back to 2% is going to be a much harder task, Villerman said. That puts a floor on how low bond yields can go again. The big recent gains for stocks on Wall Street have some critics cautioning investors not to get carried away by hopes of what's called the soft landing, where high inflation can be vanquished without a painful recession. US data has undoubtedly been encouraging, and the Federal Reserve's likelihood of staging a soft landing improves with every data point demonstrating resilient growth and falling inflation, said Selena Marsili, Chief Investment Officer Americas for UBS Global Wealth Management. But she said she still prefers safer, high-quality bonds over stocks, in part because stock prices have climbed so quickly and set the bar higher for performance in the second half of the year. And she'll say the growth for the US economy could still fall close to zero later this year, even as inflation eases. Anyway, on Friday, the S&P 500 slipped 0.1% to 4,505 to edge back from its highest closing level since April 2022. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.3% to 34,510, and the Nasdaq fell 0.2% to 14,113. JP Morgan Chase kicked off the earnings season in high gear, surpassing analysts' average earnings per share estimates by 40 cents. Revenue topped the average Wall Street outlook by more than $3 billion, and net income climbed 67%, fueled by solid loan growth, trading, and rising net interest income, thanks in part to its acquisition of the troubled First Republic Bank. Almost every line of the bank's business saw growth in the second quarter, CEO Jamie Dimon said in the company's press release, including record inflows for the asset and wealth management business. The US economy remains resilient, Dimon said, and consumer balance sheets remain healthy. Dimon's economic observations generally have Wall Street's ear, of course. Today he warned that salient risks in the immediate view remain, including substantially high core inflation that could keep rates elevated, consumers slowly using up their cash buffers, and the continuing war in Ukraine. The bank has a $2.9 billion provision for credit losses to protect it against possible loan defaults. But just as notable is what Dimon didn't say. A year ago, he predicted that there was an economic hurricane coming our way. His warnings today seem tame by comparison. Now, Wells Fargo's earnings beat was small compared to Chase's, but encouraging nonetheless, considering the company's struggles over the past decade. Net interest income again drove gains during the quarter, something all banks have enjoyed as interest rates have remained high, and of course they've put their interest rates up relative to the deposit rates. Beyond that, non-interest income rose 8%, driven partly by what the bank said was higher trading revenue. Citigroup's EPS and revenue both looked better than expected. Shares climbed 2% in pre-market trading, along with the other big banks. Trading investment banking revenue both looked better than expectations going in. And in its press release, the company referred to a challenging macroeconomic backdrop. Long-awaited rebound in investment banking has yet to materialize, making for a disappointing quarter, Citigroup Chief Executive Jane Fraser said. BlackRock was down 1.5% after it posted a decline in quarterly revenue, and some strategists said bank stocks may have sold off following recent strong gains. The S&P Banks Index snapped a five-session winning streak, along with the KBW Regional Bank Index, which was down 1.9% on the day. Insurance giant United Health Group rallied 7.2% after it said profit growth during the spring was better than feared. It also raised the bottom end of its forecast for earnings for the full year. The company said it now expects adjusted EPS of $24.70 to $25, compared to a prior range of $24.50 to $25. Helping to drag down Wall Street was State Street, which dropped 12.1% after reporting slightly weaker revenue than expected for the latest quarter, although its profit topped forecasts. The biggest drags on the benchmark index were the energy sector down 2.8% and financials down 0.7%. Treasury yields rose on Friday after the consumer report, pairing some of their sharp tumbling from earlier this week, caused by traders pairing bets of Fed rate hikes later this year. The 10-year Treasury rose to 3.83% from 3.77% late on Thursday, but it's still below the 3.98% it sat at late on Tuesday before the inflation report was released. The 10-year yield helps set rates for mortgages and other important loans, of course. The 2-year Treasury yield more closely tracks expectations for Fed action, and it's at 4.77%. That's down from 4.89% late on Tuesday, and of course it just touched 5% earlier in the week. Still, of course, also in recession inversion territory. The dollar stayed near 15-month lows. It's the biggest weekly decline since November after softening US inflation data unleashed a wave of investor optimism that the US Federal Reserve was nearing the end of its rate hiking cycle. The dollar hovered near a 15-month low on Friday at 99.91 on the DXY. The euro was steady at 1.1227, having earlier touched its highest in more than 16 months. The economic situation is less impressive in Europe, particularly in the UK, where data released on Thursday showed that its economy contracted in May. Yet inflation is running at the highest level in the G7 and more than four times higher than the Bank of England's 2% medium-term target. This points towards further interest rate hikes, further weighing on economic activity and making a recession later this year a distinct possibility. European stock indices were little changed, with the stocks down 0.12%, London's FTSE down 0.08%, and Germany's DAX down 0.2% on Friday, pulling back on recent gains, along with the CAC 40 in France, which was actually up 0.06%. Michel Morcatini, senior equity strategist at Generali Investments in Rome, urged caution. He said price-to-earnings ratios were exuberant versus real rates. And economic growth, especially in the US, we're still cautious in equities short-term due to sticky core inflation, tightening credit conditions, and macro indicators pointing south, he said in an email. The Eurozone government bond yields were little changed on Friday, with bonds holding on to their gains after a powerful two-day rally triggered by those soft US inflation numbers. The new European quarterly earnings season starts in earnest next week, but Ericsson stocks fell 5% after the Swedish telecom manufacturer of telecommunication equipment reported a 62% fall in second quarter adjusted operating profit, citing challenging market conditions, even with increased demand for 5G. Nokia stock also fell over 5% after the Finnish telecom group cut its full year guidance after it warned that its sales in 2023 will be below its previous estimate. Nokia is scheduled to publish its full second quarter earnings reports on July the 20th. And elsewhere, Burberry stock edged lower after the British luxury fashion house maintained its full-year guidance despite resurgent demand from China, lifting first-quarter sales. Since benign inflation data over the past 3 days suggests the Federal Reserve might step back sooner than expected from using its rate cudgel, gold was practically tiptoeing up, even as other commodities led by oil have blazed higher, and silver, which normally takes its cue from gold, has also left its more lustrous cousin in the shadows with sharp gains this week. The front month August gold contract on New York's COMEX settled at $1,964.40 an ounce, down 0.23% on the previous session. It did a little better, rising $2 to strike a 3 week high of $1,968.50 from a 3 month bottom of $1,960 a week ago. Gold is practically stuck in a $30 range, said Sunil Kumik-Dixit, chief technical strategist at SK Charting. The top end of the range is 1,965, while the lower end is 1,935. If we get below 1,935, be prepared for another test of 1,900 or even lower, he said. And Craig Earlham, analyst on online trading platform Onya, concurred. Gold has stalled around 1,960, after surging in the aftermath of US inflation data earlier in the week. He said, now it's a question of whether what we're seeing is a corrective move as part of the downturn since May, or if that downturn was in fact the correction. Gold's ever slow move higher in the face of the dollar's tumble to 15-month lows has surprised many. In fact, the yellow metal has been in that mode since the Labour Department reported on Wednesday that the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, grew by just 3% year on year in June versus a 40-year high of 9.1% a year ago. And the Producer Price Index, or PPI, which came in on the heels of the CPI, was also lower than expected. So all eyes are now on the Fed and what it will do to rates when its policymakers sit again on July the 26th to decide on rates. While the so-called Federal Open Market Committee of the Fed decided to pass on a rate hike last month, economists think, in all likelihood, it will vote for a 25 basis point increase this time, in keeping with its recent pace of hikes. The strong consumer sentiment report, not one that would necessarily make the Fed particularly happy, gave the longs in oil an excuse to take some profits on Friday on a market that ran up more than many expected, with a second week of gains. New York-based West Texas Intermediate, or WTI, settled down $1.47 or 1.9% at $75.42 per barrel, posting its first daily loss since the week began. On a weekly basis, the US crude benchmark was up about 2%, extending last week's 4.6% rally and the prior week's run-up of 2.1%. London-based Brent settled down $1.49 or 1.8% to $79.87 and also booked its first lower close this week after Thursday's three-month high of $81.42. For the week, Brent was also up about 2% after last week's gain of 4.8% and the prior week's 1.4% gain. Oil has been trading relatively flat today, but has made tremendous gains over the past couple of weeks and could still add to that over the coming sessions, said Craig Dellum, noting that prices were up 13% from June 28th lows and may have more to rise. But while the rally was a victory for the Saudis and their oil-producing allies in the OPEC Plus to break beyond the $80 a barrel, Erlem cautioned that Brent could face serious resistance at $83 to $84 if it continued rising. A move lower will draw attention back to $80, he added. Oil is indeed looking good on many fronts, except demand itself. The July run-up in oil has been fired by various supportive factors, including Saudi and Russian rhetoric about production cuts, an additional 1 million barrels per day, each for the kingdom, and 500,000 a day pledged by Moscow. Most Asian stocks rose further on Friday, capping off a positive week on signs of cooling US inflation, with the focus now turning to the upcoming data, offering more cues on the Chinese economy. Regional stocks took positive cues from an overnight rally on Wall Street as producer price index data further showed that inflation in the world's largest economy was indeed cooling. This in turn spurred bets that the Federal Reserve was close to reaching peak interest rates in its current cycle, sparking strong gains in technology stocks. The trend spilled over into Asian trade, with tech-heavy exchanges logging the strongest gains. Hong Kong's Hang Seng rose 0.6%, while the Taiwan Weighted Index and the South Korean KOSPI surged 1% and 1.2% respectively. Most regional indices were set for their best weekly gain so far this year, as waning fears of rising US rates saw traders pile back into risk-driven assets. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was by far the best weekly performer, up nearly 6%, as heavyweight technology stocks benefited from bets that the Chinese government will ease its regulatory scrutiny of the country's biggest internet firms. Taiwan and South Korean exchanges rose 3.3% and 3.8% respectively, while gains in commodity stocks saw Australia's ASX 200 jumping 3.6% over the week. Gains in Japan's Nikkei 225, though, were somewhat muted as a batch of weak economic readings in the country saw investors lock in profit from those 33-year highs. The index was all but flat on Friday and was up 0.5% for the week. India's Nifty 50 saw some limited gains for the week, up 0.4%, but it still notched record highs this week, and that's driven by increased optimism over the Indian economy. China's Shanghai Composite Index lagged its peers for the day, rising only 0.1%, and also showed a muted weekly performance. A swathe of weak economic readings over the past few weeks pointed to a slowing post-COVID economic recovery in the country, with the economy forecast barely to grow 0.5% in the second quarter. A decision on China's key loan prime rate is also due next week, after the People's Bank cut the rate for the first time in 8 months in June. The move had provided limited relief to Chinese stocks, which are now trading negative for the year. And new data showed that China's home prices were unchanged in June, the weakest result this year. Increasing pressure on policymakers for more stimulus as the economic recovery falters. The flat result from a month earlier, with rises slowing nationwide, was below May's 0.1 percentage gain based on the National Bureau of Statistics, the NBS data. Prices were also unchanged from a year earlier, retreating from a 0.1% increase in May. The produce sector accounted for one-fourth of activity in the world's second biggest economy, slumped sharply last year as developers defaulted on debts and suspended construction on pre-sold housing projects. The central level government and regulators have announced a slew of policies over the past year to try to prop up the sector. Measures have ranged from extended financial support for developers to multi-pronged incentives for home buyers. But the uncertain economic outlook and persistent weakness in the sector have dented confidence and home demand, dampening hopes for any quick revival. Weakness in home prices and falling exports are adding to pressure on policymakers to take even more steps to prop up the real estate and revive sluggish demand. Markets widely expect more stimulus around a meeting of the ruling Communist Party's Politburo later this month, setting the tone for economic policies for the second half of the year. The property market is in dire need of strong policies to boost confidence as small-scale policies can no longer rescue the dwindling sentiment, said analyst Chen Zhao at property data provider Huge House Hunter. Policies such as boosting employment and incomes must strengthen to support home buying, he said. 31 of the 70 cities monitored by MBS recorded month-on-month rises in new home prices, down from 46 in May. Prices were flat after rising in May in Tier 1 cities, including Beijing. And Tier 2 cities, they fell 0.1% in Tier 3 cities. So there is room for marginal optimism of property policies considering profound changes in supply and demand in the real estate market, Zhou Zulan, a senior official at the People's Bank of China, said on Friday. PBOC's officials hinted at further property policy easing in the press conference on Friday, and in July we expect that meeting to provide some support to stabilize the property market, Goldman Sachs said in a research note. The central bank on Monday extended until the end of 2024 some policies in a November rescue package for the cash-strapped sector. But the uncertain economic outlook and weakness in the sector have dented confidence, dampening hopes of any quick revival. A quarterly PBOC survey showed 16.5% of households believe housing prices will fall in the third quarter, down from the previous quarter, when 14.4% of households expected a decline. Now, the Australian share market extended its winning streak for a fourth day as traders slashed their bets on the Reserve Bank raising the cash rate in August. The benchmark S&P ASX 200 rose 0.8% to 7,303, buoyed by gains in 9 out of 11 industry sectors after the government named Deputy Reserve Bank Governor Michelle Bullock as the new central bank governor. The All Ordinaries was up 0.8% to 7,520. The rate-sensitive technology sector was the best-performing sector. It followed gains on Wall Street up 1.7%. WiseTech shares rallied 2.4% to $79.02. Xero was up 1.6% to $123.74. And XDC rose 1.4% to $12.92. Iron ore futures traded higher on the Singapore Exchange during the late afternoon trading, up 2% to $113.20 a ton on the July contract. Iron ore producers climbed as the commodity prices rose. BHP Group rose 1.8% to $45.52, and Fortescue Metals was up 1.4% to $22.79. Gold miners were among the best performing, with Evolution Mining up 3% to $3.77, Northern Star added 1.6% to $13.35, and Regis Resources jumped 2.7% to $2.25. Energy stocks extended gains from earlier this week amid higher oil prices. Woodside Energy shares rallied 1.5% to $36.28, Yang Coal rose 0.9% to $4.77, and Viva Energy surged 3.4% to $3.02. The healthcare sector was the only sector in the red, dropping 0.6%. It was dragged lower by losses in blood plasma collector CSL, down 1.3% to $200.98. ResMed shares lost 1.2% to $31.98. Meanwhile, junior biotech Neuren was an exception. Its shares soared 16.8% to $13.59 after it signed an expanded licensing deal with its US distribution partner Acadia. Medicine company Mesoblast advanced 8.2% to $1.39 ahead of an FDA decision on a drug application due August the 2nd. ASX-listed explorer Leo Lithium shares declined 1.3% to $1.80.5. The company said that it would pay $348 million to an African mining service firm to bring its lithium project to life in the West African country of Mali. Leo, which is developing the Goulamana project in southern Mali, said the contract with Corica had been awarded for 5 years and included 6 months of pre-production. And finally, whilst Bitcoin continues to float around the 30,000 US, there was action in crypto land this week as one of the crypto's biggest debates, which is what should and what shouldn't be counted as security in the eyes of US regulators, turned promising for retail-facing projects after a key legal ruling on Thursday. But like many things involving the sector, decisions weren't completely clear-cut. A three-year court battle between Ripple Labs, the developer of the Ripple blockchain, and the Securities and Exchange Commission took a major turn, with a federal judge ruling that the network's XRP token was a security when Ripple sold it to institutional investors a number of years ago, but not to the general public. US District Judge Annalisa Torres' main reasoning was that institutional investors were more likely to be aware of XRP securities-like traits when being pitched by Ripple back then. But so-called programmatic investors, those who buy XRP directly on a crypto exchange, like retail traders, weren't as clued in. Both Ripple and the SEC would have reasons to view the outcome as a potential win, as it gives credence to the security or not debate on either side. But extrapolating the Ripple decision as a positive for the rest of the crypto market isn't so simple. For starters, the decision was based on how well retail investors understood crypto years ago during a period that ended in 2020. At that time, Bitcoin was worth a fraction of what it is now, and regulators were only beginning to form opinions about the space, something which has obviously changed. Should the SEC address the court's issue by making sure what counts as a security is clear to the general public going forward? Well, maybe. That tactic has been a hallmark of several of the watchdog's lawsuits against crypto companies such as Binance, Coinbase, and Gemini this year, when it named a number of tokens like Polygon's Matic and Algorand's Algo that could one day face the same walk as XRP. But the court disagreed with large swathes of the SEC's argument as to why XRP was a security, citing the Supreme Court's Howey test. Among them is the fact that secondary market buyers were never promised anything by Ripple itself, something which is true of most exchange-traded instruments. So some are taking this early decision to mean Coinbase and others accused of listing potential securities may now be in the clear, at least when it comes to the general public buying on their exchanges. But while the possible disruption of forcing retail-facing businesses to register or reinvent their business models is possibly avoided, it's only one side of things. Many successful crypto projects these days rely on early sales of their tokens to institutional investors and venture capitalists prior to their public launch in order to get off the ground, often pre-registering those efforts with regulators to avoid any potential repercussions. Many on the SEC's list of possible securities had conducted those types of arrangements, and the SEC cited these examples as reasons the tokens could fall under its remit. With Thursday's ruling, that type of pre-funding might be done for, unless VCs fancy buying on the open market when prices are subject to the same volatility as everyone else. And should be noted that the SEC's to-do list on the crypto sector is getting longer by the day. The watchdog was one of the four authorities filing charges against bankrupt crypto lender Celsius and its former CEO Alex Mashinsky earlier on Thursday, and faces a lengthy series of court hearings and trials ahead of its complaints against exchanges like Binance and FTX. By the way, Mashinsky has denied the allegations. The Ripple case is also far from over. It's set to go to its own trial date in due course. So the verdict, widely celebrated in the crypto community, triggered a swift price surge for XRP, which at one point pumped by an impressive 100%. However, despite this immediate price jump, long-term performance remains a concern for investors. The digital asset is still down by more than 90% against Bitcoin and 60% against the US dollar, underscoring the scale of recovery needed to regain its previous positions. While the double-digit pump certainly created a positive buzz around XRP, the reality is that it barely scratched the surface in compensating for the substantial losses experienced over the past few years. So the court ruling is undoubtedly a significant milestone for Ripple and could potentially change the game for XRP if this legal victory can instigate sustained buying interest, particularly from institutional investors. It might set the stage for a longer term value increase for XRP, but investors should exercise caution. The digital currency market is known for its volatility, and while positive news can spark rapid price rallies, they can just as quickly reverse. Additionally, it is important to note that the ruling does not necessarily translate into a green light for all of Ripple's operations. It merely indicates that XRP itself is not a security. So while crypto might be celebrating with prices soaring across the board, there are enough uncertainties to leave the sector with a cause for concern. And indeed, stepping back, I think you can say the same for the broader markets. Clearly, the inflation dynamic in the US has changed a little bit. But as I argued the other day, the problem is that the base effects are supporting the falls in CPI at the moment. That may reverse. And the Fed is still preaching, we've got to lift rates higher, we've got to crush inflation. So the idea that it is going to actually turn turtle and cut rates soon is still a fairy tale. And that means that some people, I think, still estimating the value in the markets higher than they really are. So once again, caution, 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 until we see how this all plays out. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.